This is episode number 82 of the Paleo Women Podcast. Welcome to the Paleo Women Podcast. I'm your co-host, Noelle Tarr, a nutritional therapy practitioner and a certified personal trainer. And with me is my partner in crime, Stephanie Ruper, author of the best-selling book, Sexy by Nature. This show is the place to be if you're a fan of moderately amusing banter and uninhibited real talk relating to health, nutrition, fitness, body image, and just about everything in between. While hanging out with us, please remember the information on this podcast is intended to provide helpful and informative material and should not be used in place of medical advice or treatment. Now, let's have some fun. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Noelle.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. I am in the Philly.
In the Philly. How are you enjoying
officially
it?
Officially in the Philly. For those who are new to the podcast, the past 6 to 12 months has been pretty stressful because we didn't know where we were moving, and then it was finally we were moving, and now I'm here, and it's like, there's nothing else to talk about. Just kidding. I love it. It's great. We are semi-settled. It's been a really stressful past couple of weeks because we were moving from a pretty large house. You know, that house, it was really big. Yeah. Lots of extra rooms. And, you know, we were able to kind of store stuff away and had lots of closets to a downtown home in South Philly, literally like... Not even a linen closet. There's no closets in the house whatsoever.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty tough. So it's a whole different lifestyle change. We have sold so much stuff, living minimally. It's great. But I am an interior designer at heart. And so it's been a little bit of a challenge to like figure out what to keep and what to toss. And yeah, I don't know, you know, I just like to have pretty things around. And so we've redone a couple rooms with just really basic pieces. I'm more of a what you'd call like modern rustic kind of feel. Like I like things really light and airy. So that was not what I was like 10 years ago when I was like going through college and stuff. So we basically got rid of a ton of stuff and we're getting some new stuff in. We got a new couch and whatnot. So we're getting there. We're getting settled. And now we're recording a podcast, which means we're officially here. I was putting up all these like the sound equipment on my walls because I tried to like I was testing before we were going to jump on the call and I was testing it and it was like you could hear this like echo and I was like no. So luckily I my worst nightmare. So luckily I had purchased these really cool like sound absorbers and wow. Put them up on the walls and it did the trick. Pretty easy. Wow.
I'll do that when I get back to London. I remember I can hear myself echoing right now because I'm staying with my best friend in Boston and she's moving. And so there's no furniture in this room right now. It's just me and a microphone. Yeah. So I'm trying to keep it a little quiet so I don't echo. But I do remember listening to the podcast in which we talked about feminism and I was like getting very indignant and gesturing grandly with my hands. But I thought that the echo kind of worked really well there. It kind of sounded like we were speaking in a stadium. And yeah. I was like, man, we're so boss. But I will invest in some sound help for the sake of our audience because yes. I love you very much.
You do care about the quality. I do want to note, too, that you finally listened to one of our podcasts because it was about feminism. That was great.
Yeah. You know, I think I probably listened to one like back around, you know, the 20s.
Yeah, you might have. Yeah, I think you were just like, let me see what this sounds like. Yeah, back in the day, we probably were pretty, I don't want to overdo this. I keep wanting to say strugs, but it's like one of those words you don't want to kill and make like super annoying. But we were strugs back in the day. The sound quality was not all there, and there's a lot of nice echoing. I'm pretty convinced that all the people who don't listen to the podcast are valid in their because usually people listen to the first one. You and I were just commenting about this. People probably go and listen to the first one because the first one has like double the amount of downloads that we typically have, like, on a weekly basis for the ones that we just released. And I don't blame them for not continuing on from number one. I'm like, we should re-record it and be like, and replace that podcast with a more recent rendition.
I'd be happy to do that if you want to do that. I will say, though, that I think most people who listen to podcasts know that the early ones are always a little rocky.
I hope so, because we were rocky.
We were rocky, but our audience has been so wonderful in helping us with leaving positive reviews. And so I think that gives people reason to keep trying.
Just keep trying.
Keep on trying.
Yeah. No, we won't go and replace it. It's something like, I feel like you have to keep those original ones. It was actually very encouraging to me to go back and listen to the original ones of people like who have been podcasting for a really long time. So that was encouraging to me before we started.
Mm-hmm.
Got to keep them there. Keep it honest. We are honest folk. Hey, talk to me about your happenings in Boston and particularly men.
Noelle like wants to get me good and proper on the podcast, right? There's nothing proper about my life. Although I was just telling Noelle, I can't believe I'm saying this out loud to thousands of people. Dating someone I actually like. There is just so happens to be somebody in my life who is not restoring my faith, giving me faith that there are some men in the world who will treat me well and I'm having fun. And there's this, we're just having a lot of fun. There's this dance thing this upcoming weekend. You have to travel to, I'm going to Washington, D.C. actually. And I'm going to fly him down to spend the weekend with me. So
what?
I know.
Wait,
I
for know. Your brother's wedding?
No, my brother's getting married in Detroit in a month. So anyway, something different, but this is like a dancing thing where, you know, in another one of my dance party weekends, that make our whole audience realize that I have no right to complain about how much I work ever, because it pretty much sounds like every weekend I'm flouncing about the world dancing.
Well,
which
you are.
May or may not be true.
So, so does this guy dance?
Oh yeah.
Oh, and he's good.
And he's nice. We met dancing. Yeah. Okay. Of course, you know,
awesome.
But he's remarkable. It's really problematic because good dancers, I can't stop myself. And he's the first like really good dancer that I also connect with like really well as a human being. So it's nice.
So that's great. So mm-hmm. What's different about this one besides that he's nice?
Nice is a terrible word. It's a terrible word. So I find that what I really want. Okay, so intelligence is really important to me, but I'm kind of over it. And this guy is very intelligent, but and ambition too. Like I do a lot of things, right? And I have this list of things that I have and want to do, and ambition is important too. And all of these things are all these different ways that the people around us can inspire us. But I find that the most important thing, what I want so much in the world, is for people to inspire me to be a better person. And he is so incredibly thoughtful and giving and considerate and like genuinely loving, like just wants the people around him and people in the world to be loving. And that's not the only way in my life that I want to be inspired. But right now that's what I think the most important thing for people to be is good and thoughtful. And he is those things. And that's really great. And did I mention he's a really good dancer?
Yay.
Correct. But he lives in Boston and I live in London and it's fine. Everything's fine.
Sounds like you're going to have to move back to Boston soon.
Yeah. No.
Wow. You don't think you're going to ever move back to Boston?
I have never thought I was going to move back to Boston. I suppose things might happen. You know, I might want to. I love my friends here. I really do. But the world is really big, and it was always the plan was always to travel more when I was done with London, you know, and California maybe. So
or Philly. Don't crush my dreams.
The dancing in Philadelphia is fine.
I'm sure it's actually much better than you think.
Probably.
Yeah, I'm just speculating.
I'm not condemning it, and I wouldn't, especially if I hadn't done it. It's not well known for its dancing, but sure. Yeah, I'll give it a shot.
It's very well known for artsy things.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Avenue of the Arts is Broad Street, which separates East and West. Oh. There is Philly is the city with the most wall, like, painted murals.
Yeah. So you said art stuff, and immediately I thought people dance. Making art and stuff, but that's not actually it. Avenue of the Arts is like museums. Correct.
No, it's like full on arts here. Very artsy. Weird sculptures everywhere.
I live in an artsy city.
Like very weird sculptures. I that's just my interpretation based on my very few times that I've driven up the Avenue of the Arts is lots of sculptures. I'll let you know. I'll do some research and I will come back and convince you that Philly is where you need to be.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah. So any other thoughts, suggestions before we get... Oh, you know what? I did want to mention, we don't really talk about this a lot, but Steph and I do together with the sponsors that we have for the Paleo Women podcast. We donate to an organization called Thistle Farms. And we don't necessarily, since we don't necessarily talk about it a lot, I wanted to quickly mention that they are doing awesome things. You can actually buy products. So by downloading and listening to this podcast, you are donating to them, which is awesome because we get our sponsors pay per download. So by downloading, you're going ahead and donating, which is cool, a passive way of donating. But you can actually go to thistlefarms.org and learn all about the organization. They're doing some new cool stuff. They actually have like a cafe and they have a way that they're helping. They are helping. They're doing a lot for women in particular, which is why we decided to partner with them. And they have actually women that are victims of human trafficking, and they do a lot to help them rehabilitate and then also employ them. And so they actually have some really cool stuff. You can shop on their website for things that these women are making, and they sell all these things on their website. It's all a lot of natural skincare products, and then also really cool, like, just all these different what I would call tchotchkes, but like candles. And I just saw something come up for some really cool like summer scarves that are on sale. So go ahead and head over to thistlefarms.org. They are no way paying us to donate to them. It's just something we are really excited about and passionate about. And I definitely wanted to continue to mention them because they're doing awesome things and we like to be involved with awesome things. Second quick announcement that I have. I'm going to be hiring some people, which is great news. It's also really complicated, but please be on the lookout. I probably won't be doing this in the next week or two. So when this podcast airs, you'll still have a lot of time. I need some people, multiples, to help me with a couple different things. I'm going to be putting information out on my Instagram and potentially to my email list, but it'll most likely be to Instagram first. And it'll most likely be relating to helping run the Strong From Home program that I'm coming out with soon. I need somebody to help me with all the details and lots of stuff with that. So experience in fitness would be wonderful. And then I also am looking for just like an assistant. So it's maybe you're a jack of all trades, but specific things that I'm going to need, I'm going to put in the information that I put out about, you know, what it is that I need, how many people I'm hiring, what I'm hiring, the positions, that sort of thing. I'm just not totally there yet, but I will be totally there in a few weeks. So be on the lookout for that.
Can I chime in super quick?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am going to be looking, and maybe Noelle and I are going to be looking. I need web people. I need web developers and web designers.
Really?
Yeah, or a... So anyway, I'm going to be looking for that too. So keep your eyes open.
Are you redoing the website?
I'm not redoing anything. What I really would like to have is somebody sort of in the loop on our team to be around for when projects come up and for little things that need to be done along the way. Like, for example, like the menu on my website, I want it to float, and I wanted it to float for 4 months and I haven't figured out how to do it. Like, that's a thing, right? So
yeah, it is.
So anyway, and development things sort of come up all the time, and I would love to have somebody like that who's there's a lot of developers who work in the web world, but I would love to have somebody who's like a part of our community and into our message and all of this stuff.
The Paleo Women Podcast, employing people since 2016. I'm going to be honest though, the people in our community are the best.
Literally the best.
That's why we're like, hire all of the people.
I have always, everybody, that's how I found Noelle. That's how Noelle and I found each other.
Yes. Really? Okay. Are you ready for questions? Because we have lots of stuff.
Born.
You were always born. I'm excited. Let's do this. Collagen is the most abundant protein in the body and is a key constituent of all connective tissues. It provides strength and structure to bones, joints, muscles, skin, and hair, and affects our gut integrity and digestive strength. This is why we're big fans of Vital Proteins, which offers 100% pasture-raised collagen products, as well as beef liver capsules. Their most popular product, collagen peptides, can easily be added to water, smoothies, teas, and soups for supplementation, and the beef gelatin can be used to make things like homemade gummies or cookies. As a special offer for our community, Vital Proteins is offering a buy two items, get one free discount on their website, plus free shipping. To get this incredible deal, simply head over to vitalproteins.com and use promo code PWP, all caps, no spaces at checkout. Check the show notes for more details about this special deal. Question number one is from Emma. I started to begin this email with an opinion on which Team Apple I was on. However, I decided you had received enough feedback on how awesome apples are, so I won't beat that drum. Instead, on to the annoying, complicated question of WTF is going on and how to fix it. I've been dealing with hypothalamic amenorrhea for a while. Okay, honestly, I haven't had a cycle in more than 4 years, but have just recently been officially diagnosed by a reproductive endocrinologist. To make a long story short of my health history, let's hit the high points. Number one, started period at age 12 and had super heavy cycles every 2 weeks, so was put on the pill. Number two, take pill for around 16 years, mostly using the no period necessary protocol of back-to-back packs. Number three, insert eating disorder, anorexia, from age 22 to 25. Never required hospitalization, but got down to a low body weight. Number four, gained weight, but add marathon running and over-exercising from age 25 to present. And number five, currently a control freak personal trainer, still holding on to maintaining a certain look while being blissfully married and scared of infertility. Phew. A lot in 30 years, but not as dramatic as it sounds. I am honestly a pretty healthy, happy, and content lady with a great hubby, friends, and life. I finally decided to seek help to recover my MIA period and was found to have osteopenia, HA, and infertility. My doctor says he hopes that I could conceive a child via IVF or hormone treatment, but natural conception was unlikely. He now wants to put me on a natural estradiol and synthetic progesterone to help with bone density, which I am super concerned if this is the best method and sadly freaking out about potential weight gain I have Googled and how to prevent. I also have been referred to a medical endocrinologist due to double the normal range 24-hour cortisol levels, 93 out of the normal 0 to 50 range. My husband and I are not even 100% on having kids, but the idea of having that option taken away is a big shocker. I'm both confused and unsure of how to proceed with osteopenia, getting my hormones leveled, and what steps to take next. I also struggle with fatigue, blood sugar swings, sex drive, I think she probably means low sex drive, mood and brain fog. I feel in a blur of how to actually begin this process, if seeing some type of functional medicine practitioner is a better direction, or frankly, what to do, not to mention dealing with the physical, emotional fallout. Any tips? Sincerely, Emma.
I have so many tips.
I thought you would.
Okay, so for the sake of bone density and for the sake of conception or what have you, going with your reproductive endocrinologist's recommendations pharmaceutically works, right? So the estrogen and the progesterone can help with some symptoms. They can help with the bone density issue, which is a real concern, and should be addressed now, because your bone strength now does impact how strong your bones will be when you're 70 or 80. It will help with that. And if you decide, you and your doctor decide to do IVF or whatever, that can help you conceive at a time like this. So conception is not out of the picture, especially with these pharmaceutical tools at hand. That being said, wait, before I get to that. So your body has been through a lot of trauma. I know that you say it's not as dramatic as it sounds, but with being on the pill for a very long time and with the anorexia and the running and all of the stuff, that's a lot, and it's a long time. And so even with natural interventions or natural changes, it may be possible that you still require IVF or some sort of pharmaceutical help to conceive. Now, I don't think that's necessary, but I just want to put out there first and foremost that it is possible, right? That may be something you're going to have to consider in a few years, but I think you do have a couple years of working on it naturally before turning to that if you want to make sure you do it the natural way. Now, there's nothing necessarily unhealthy about doing it the unnatural way. There really isn't, except that it could mess with symptoms even further. It could complicate things in that way, but I wouldn't be concerned about that, like health consequences of IVF. All of that being said, the issue here for your hormones and for your cortisol, which is huge, and the blood sugar swings and the fatigue and the low sex drive, it's just, this screams, I don't eat enough. And I don't weigh enough, maybe. And I probably exercise too much. And it sounds like you're quite aware of that fact, right? You listed yourself as, what was the phrase you used? A control freak, personal trainer, still holding on to maintaining a certain look. So this is probably why you're experiencing blood sugar swings. A lot of women experience hypoglycemia and blood sugar swings as a result of undereating for a long time. This is definitely a huge red flag for low libido. It's a huge red flag for so many things, insomnia, mood swings, you name it. There's a lot there. So this is probably what we want to address. And you're talking about how to get started doing these things, right? This is also the underlying problem for the osteopenia and the bone stuff. How do you get started with this? I think it's entirely psychological work. I think it's entirely digging into questions of why you are a control freak, why you identify as a control freak, why you need to control your food, why do you need to control your image, why do you need to look a particular way, why has this been a part of your life for so long, right? There's obviously current circumstances, but this has been with you your entire life. You've been under eating for a very long time. And even though you have made some gains and you've become aware of these things, I would argue that you're probably not quite as far down that path as ideal or you may think you are or would like to be. You know, very often it's like, oh, I do often feel I'm like, ah, I'm totally fine. Like, this is totally fine. And then a few months later, I look back in retrospect, I'm like, man, that was pretty disordered. And I don't like to put that label on anybody, or labels of any sort, but it is often the case that we make some progress and we're like, well, I'm doing fine. Like, I've gained some weight, but putting on some weight and still controlling your image is not peacefully letting your body be the size that it needs to be. And that's what I think your body needs. The more you undereat, the less you eat, the more you exercise, the more you demand of your body energetically without giving it back, the less hormones your body makes, and the less fertile you are, the lower your sex drive, the more symptoms that are associated with low hormone levels come up. So that's sort of, you know, I don't know about your life. I don't know about why you may have these things, but I think that that's definitely where you need to sort of point if you want to do this the natural way, right? Because really the answer, the natural way, is not a functional medicine doctor. A functional medicine doctor might say, oh, take some, you know, vitamin E to help with your progesterone, and maybe it'll help a tiny bit. But what a functional medicine doc is going to say is eat more. And if they don't, I think they might be wrong. They can do everything they can to help boost your fertility, but this is the thing. The thing is under eating, and the thing is not letting your body get the nourishment it wants and working on intuitively eating. So Noelle drew her breath in. So I'm going to let you speak now.
It was a bit of a sigh. I Noelle drew her breath in. I have to stop myself sometimes because I want to be like, yeah, and like talk in there with you. And I'm like, so I got to stop.
You shouldn't. I like when you talk.
I know. Good. I do too.
Good. Good. This is great. Good.
This works. So Emma, I don't think, first of all, you've been through a lot. And I know that it's really confusing and there's a lot going on and you're scared of infertility and all that stuff. And at some point, I think that, you know, it seems like you're having a moment. A lot of us have that moment of, is what we're doing, is it worth it? Is the things that we're valuing and what we're putting our time and effort into, is that still where we want to put our time and effort? Is that still going to be our priority? Is that still going to be where we put all of our attention? And you're having this moment where you're struggling. You haven't had a period. You are, I think you're kind of hinting at it. Like, I think that you do know the root cause, which you said in number five. And you're kind of weighing the options of, what is it that I need to do moving forward? How is it worth it to gain weight, to get my fertility back? And that's only a question that you really can answer, to be honest, because I'm not going to tell you that these are all the things that you need to do. You have to gain weight and you have to do this. You don't have to do anything you don't want to. But if your fertility and having hormonal levels balanced again and not dealing with chronic cortisol output, all of those things, if you don't want to deal with those things anymore, there are some very real shifts and changes that need to happen. And it starts with eating more, like Stephanie said, and it starts with changing the way that you engage with exercise. Because I can tell you right now that chronic cortisol is mostly due to the fact that you're over-exercising, which you've done for the last, I'm guessing, 5 years. And your body thinks that it is it's under attack, right? It thinks that it's under chronic stress, which it is, right? But it thinks that there is some sort of stressor happening and it's got to keep you alive. And what happens is, when we have these really heavy stressors, to include the over-exercising, the marathon training, you're a control freak, I'm guessing you're doing a little bit of restriction and not eating enough for your body, all of those things accumulate and it manifests as this chronic cortisol output, which can affect every other thing in your body when it comes to how your endocrine system functions. And like Steph was saying, you know, our body needs resources to make cortisol. And so when our body is constantly producing cortisol, it basically steals all those resources from pathways that are there to help create other hormones like our sex hormones. So this is why you're seeing such low hormone production, sex hormone production, is because your body is putting all of its resources that it needs to produce cortisol. Cortisol comes from your adrenal glands, and I'm betting that your adrenal glands are starting to be affected as well. I mean, in the future, it's where is this path leading you? Where are you going? And in the future, I can see you things to look out for would be adrenal dysfunction, tiredness, maybe thyroid conditions, thyroid issues. So it's just a moment that you're going to have and reevaluate why it is that you're operating the way that you do now. It seems like you're really happy. You have a wonderful husband. You maybe do someday want to be fertile and have children. And if that's something that's important to you, you know, ask yourself why you're doing this. And if you don't know, it's really helpful to work with somebody in the mindset area. I mean, I'm sure you could listen to a lot of our podcasts because we've gone over a lot of this stuff, in particular the body image stuff and where it is that we get these, I've got to look this way and where, you know, I've got to exercise this way and I've got to have this identity and I need to be the marathon chick and I need to be this exact weight. And a lot of that stuff that you may find that it's actually not a truth, right? So it's not an absolute. It's something that we've been told as women, we need to look this way, we need to act this way, we need to exist this way in order to be worthy or attractive or to have power. But a lot of that stuff is just, it doesn't hold water once you try to dig deeper and figure out why is it that that is that way and why is it that this is the way that we should be and why is it that the media is telling us to look this way. Money. Right? A lot of products are out there to make money off of women constantly being in this state of needing to exist a certain way and lose weight. And so it's going to have to be your own journey and digging a little deeper and figuring out why it is that you do want to, why you're driven to be a control freak who overexercises, and why you're holding on to maintaining a certain look. Now, it's completely your choice. You can still live that way if you want to. But at some point, I think a lot of us have that moment of why am I doing this? And can I maybe start to explore a different way of it existing and create a new conversation about what it really means to be healthy and happy and live vibrantly and enjoy all that life has to offer without needing to follow some guidelines that Shape Magazine told us or told you in order to get a six pack or whatever. Not saying that that's what you're doing, but that's what most women feel is the pinnacle of, you know, how they should exist. And so, you know, it's told to us often. And I do think it would be really worth it to work with somebody to help guide you through that. Like Stephanie said, a functional medicine practitioner will probably tell you a lot of the same things that you're going to hear on this podcast. I think that would be a better, it's always a great option to get a second opinion, and functional medicine practitioners are fantastic and have a lot of knowledge. And if you find the right one that's right for you, I think that's great. Of course, you can work with somebody too who's very specific to mindset. I think that would help. So it's all about just building a team around you that can help you be the best you and be happy and healthy. I do want you to be encouraged. I don't think that the diagnosis is you're never going to be able to naturally conceive. I don't accept that for you. And I don't believe that that's an absolute. I think that you can... If you do kind of follow, I don't want to toot our horn here. If you follow what we say on the podcast, but if you take a lot of the advice that we've talked about before with HA, I think that your body, once you're able to stop the chronic cortisol output and you're able to stop the overexercising and stop the control freakness, I think that that's the root of it. I think that that once you kind of learn a new way of existing and living and tell your body that it's not under stress, I think that you'll be able to have your period again, hopefully, and you'll be able to conceive. That's not an absolute either. I mean, I'm just speculating, but I don't think that it's you're never going to be able to naturally conceive. So if that's something that you do want to do, then I would say right now is the time to start, as opposed to a couple years down the road when you're like, okay, now I do want to try to conceive, but you've maybe got a year or two of work ahead of you that needs to be done to help go through all the things that women, as women, we go through, which includes the mental and emotional component, not just shifting how we exercise, shifting how we eat and all that stuff. So that's my thoughts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Question number two is from Nina. This is a fun question, Stephanie. You're going to like this.
I know. I already.
Oh, you previewed. How do you know Elle and Stephanie? So I'm going to do the whole fangirl thing, even though I know you ladies have heard all this stuff before. It must be said. Shh. Don't speak. Let it happen. Okay. First, I want to thank you for reminding women, and some men too, I'm sure, that our bodies are always trying so hard to work with us and keep us healthy. I want to thank you for telling women it's okay to think about something else besides losing weight. And I want to thank you for telling women that we should ask for more in our sex lives and not feel guilty about it. And finally, I want to thank you for being such strong advocates for sloths. They need a voice.
Word.
All right. Enough of that. To my question, which are strange and varied. I'm sure they might be related, though, as these things usually are. First, I was wondering if you two fine ladies have any suggestions for how to deal with clogged pores, or at least I think that's what they are. I used to have a significant amount of acne in my teens and fell into the dermatological black hole that is proactive out of depression. It keeps the acne scars at bay, but my face was almost constantly red and very sensitive. It took me a while to wean myself off of this stuff. My skin was never exactly the same. In the years since, I've stopped using Proactiv. I can't remember not having small flesh-colored bumps all over my forehead. In certain lights, these bumps are practically invisible, but then I turn my head towards the light and bam, my forehead is a moonscape. I have had these bumps through a variety of different diets, vegetarian, vegan, low-carb, high-carb, paleo, etc., as well as a variety of stress levels and exercise regimes, though I definitely noticed an uptick when I am very stressed. Now these bumps have mitigated to my cheeks and I've proven to be just as stubborn as they were on my forehead. I've tried eliminating dairy, grains, eggs, nuts, legumes, and nightshades. None of these eliminations seem to do anything, though. I've struggled with a host of digestive issues in the past, IBSD stuff mostly, but I have worked tirelessly to remedy these in the last 2 years. I don't eat paleo anymore, but I still adhere to a real food sort of diet. She gives us a day of what she eats: grass-fed cow's milk, lots of veggies, avocado, protein shake from grass-fed whey, etc., etc. As for exercise, I used to be one of those classic over-exercisers, 2 workouts a day, always as intense as possible, tons of HIIT, lots of running, 2+ hours. My rest days included 90 minutes of hot yoga. You get my drift. Now I still work out regularly, but the intensity has been turned down considerably and duration is much shorter. I'm currently a graduate student working on my master's thesis and getting ready to apply to PhD programs, so I'm not sure if these little bumps have anything to do with the stress. I have a history of anxiety issues, particularly social anxiety. Introverts unite. But I've been able to keep this stuff under control in the past couple of years. If you have any advice on how to get rid of these for good, I'd greatly appreciate it. And oh yeah, I have hypothalamic amenorrhea. I've had that for 3 years. Okay, so that's number one. Sorry, brevity is not my strong suit. My second question is a little bizarre. Do you ladies ever just feel like you cannot eat any more vegetables, particularly non-starchy veggies? For the past few months, I have started to dread my lunches and dinners because I know I will have to eat vegetables. I still eat them out of habit and a nagging sense of obligation, but I no longer look forward to vegetables the way I used to. For so many years, I was that girl who could eat a massive bowl of veggies without thinking about it. I made a big A salad every day for lunch. I cooked up veggie omelets for breakfast, but now I just want to eat oatmeal and yogurt all day. Maybe I just don't like chewing anymore? I don't know. I realize this might be a goofy question, but I thought I might as well throw it out there. Thanks.
I have to be honest, I'm not so sure about the vegetables.
Great.
But the acne, I think I have a pretty good idea about.
Sure.
Sure. So this kind of acne, I hate to be like, different kinds of areas on your face correspond to different kinds of hormone problems. But I actually think this is kind of true. And I would say by and large that this particular kind of acne, these bumps, which are called comedones, when they occur by and large on your forehead and then down onto your cheeks, there's a lot that goes into that. But one of the main components of it is stress. Like, hands down, no questions asked. When your adrenal glands are producing DHEAS, that has a pretty strong effect on hormone receptors in your face in those areas. And, you know, the like DHEAS is a male sex hormone, but it's a little bit different than testosterone. And so testosterone will show up in places around your mouth, your jaw, and your chin. Like, that's definitely a very well-known fact. But DHEAS will still affect you. Cortisol and this DHEAS will cause comedones to pop up when you are stressed out. And I have seen this in people a lot, and I've seen it in myself personally. And it's so subconscious, you know, it just depends on where, like, if I'm in a living situation that is slightly more comfortable than another, my forehead will be completely clear of comedones. But if I move back to London or Oxford and all of a sudden it's like slightly unfamiliar, my bumps are going to come back a little bit. Also, these things will worsen if you don't exfoliate, and they will worsen if you touch your forehead or touch your cheeks or wherever you're having these problems, right? So this is, by and large, what this is skin cells and debris sort of clumping in your pores, but not becoming aggravated and turning into zits, right? They're sort of under the surface. And so this means that touching obviously can be a problem because you're adding oil and a lot of other stuff to your skin environment. And that's why exfoliating helps. Now, something else that goes into this process of building up skin cells in your pores is actually eating protein. So I might recommend considering cutting down on the protein content of your diet a little bit. Now, I think that this is a less good fix than reducing stress, but I think it can certainly help. And of course, reducing inflammation helps with everything related to your skin, and increasing estrogen levels helps with everything related to your skin. But I think a low protein diet can help. And I think definitely the stress thing can help. And I don't know if you have any other specific ideas about this, Noelle, but those are two main ones. By the way, the like PS, I have hypothalamic amenorrhea. Okay. So like, you can't just throw that out there. Like, it doesn't matter. That's actually really big for this, because I'm talking about stress, and psychological stress is big for hypothalamic amenorrhea, but so is physiological stress, right? We talked about in the last question, like under eating with low estrogen and low progesterone. And those two things are crucial for clear skin, right? And DHEAS and testosterone both can rise, DHEAS more so than testosterone, but DHEAS can rise with hypothalamic amenorrhea because it's not produced by the sex organs, it's produced by the adrenal glands. So when you have hypothalamic amenorrhea, your stress hormones can be really high, but your sex hormones like estrogen won't be able to balance them because you don't have them, right? And so reducing stress is huge, but eating more, you know, eating as much as possible, relaxing as much as you can. Like, unfortunately, or not, maybe this is really fortunate because this acne is going to force you to do something that's probably good for you in other ways. Unfortunately or not, this is what you have to do for this kind of skin problem. I don't really see a way around it, to be honest with you. Noelle?
Yes, I, okay. So for the acne, for the clogged pores, we didn't really talk about anything you're doing topically. So I typically recommend trying out a couple of those things. Like I always, you know, I had been doing the paleo thing, doing the real food thing, no gluten, no dairy for quite a while. And I still was getting pretty, what I'd call like, I wouldn't call it acne, but they were pimple-like. They were more like hard white bumps on my cheeks and on my forehead. And I would get that pretty regularly. And once I started doing the oil cleansing method, and I just simply use coconut oil, that really changed my face, as did the apple cider vinegar toner. And the apple cider vinegar toner is an astringent, which does mean it will tighten pores ever so slightly. It doesn't work for everybody that way. It's not that simple, but I find that that has really, really helped unclog my pores and keep my face kind of light. What I'd say kind of is like lighter and clearer. I would not recommend using the coconut oil, however, because it is a comedogenic oil. Now, for some people, a very small amount of people, coconut oil will clog pores. Most of the people that I've talked to have only really had a couple people tell me that they've gotten small bumps, comedogenic acne from using coconut oil. So I would just recommend not using that and instead using something depending on your skin type. You know, a really good oil to try out is jojoba oil, or you could use something like avocado oil. And both of those oils are something called carrier oils, meaning you can just use them by themselves, or you can use them with a second type of oil, which would be more of an astringent oil, which does a really good job of going in and cleaning out pores. You could use castor oil. And so you'd mix like 10% castor oil with 90% avocado oil, and you would rub that under your face. You'd take a washcloth. I like to use the Norwex, their antimicrobial washcloths. Rinse it under warm water, hold it on your face, and allow that oil to naturally kind of break up a lot of the dirt and oil that's on your face and in your pores. And with the warm washcloth, that'll lift a lot of that off of your face. And then you wipe it all off with any excess that didn't come off when you did the little steam bath on your face for 15 to 20 seconds. You wipe it off with the washcloth. And you can do that multiple times, rinsing the washcloth, putting it back on your face, then wiping it away. And then follow up with an apple cider vinegar toner, which is literally just apple cider vinegar cut in half with distilled or purified water. So that's typically what I do. And when I started doing that, that made a huge difference because, like you, I don't know what the deal is, but like, you know, I've always struggled with these like blackhead kind of things, or like just like my pores are a little bit bigger. It used to be a lot worse and now it's a lot better. They're on my nose. I think most people do have them, just you know, it's a sort of normal, but there are things that you can absolutely do. I would highly recommend trying something out topically for that. Now, the really interesting thing that I want to talk about, however, is the vegetable thing. I think this is really interesting, and I don't think that there's necessarily anything wrong with you that you don't want to eat the vegetables, nor do I think you need to like force yourself to eat all the veggies if you're not feeling it. I think one of the cool things about really being more intuitive with your eating, as you know, I still have a structure, I still have a way of eating, I still have boundaries and things that I do eat and things that I don't eat. But I've had times as well where I just don't want to eat the veggies. A lot of this has to do with the time of year. So in the winter, sometimes I'll just go through a bout and I really don't want any dry, cold vegetables, like raw vegetables. I really will only want things warm, like a saute, or I'll just do lots of like more potatoes, more starchy vegetables. Sometimes it happens. And I think that it's really important to kind of listen to your body for right now. I think that, a lot of roughage it just gets a little overwhelming sometimes. I used to eat carrots and broccoli with a lot of olive oil and salt and pepper on them, and that's what I would eat for lunch every day. And I went for probably about 6 months not doing that, and we still would do salads at night, but I mean, I really just stopped eating vegetables throughout the day and instead really focused on more what I was feeling like eating. So, and recently that's been a lot more carbohydrate. That's been a lot more fresh fruit with a lot of water in it, like apples. And I think that's just because of this fact that it's hot and it's fruits are in season. I'm also more drawn to like potatoes and rice and stuff right now. And so I would just go with the flow. I don't think you need to force yourself to eat veggies. Try just give yourself like 4 to 5 days where you eat the things that you like. You don't force yourself to eat vegetables, or you eat vegetables in a different way. So like if you don't feel like stuffing yourself with a salad at lunch, don't do it. And see if you start to want that for dinner, or see if there's a different way that you want vegetables for dinner. So for example, sauteed in coconut oil or olive oil, or mixed in with like a chili or a stew. Like there's a lot of different ways that you can eat vegetables without eating them raw and feeling like disgusted by it. So try, you know, just having recipes at night that have a lot of veggies in them, and don't force yourself to eat them and eat other things. I bet that, you know, after a few weeks of kind of doing that, you may be like, I'd really like some broccoli again, you know? And I think that we need to kind of follow that intuition and go with the flow. You know, nobody wants to like dread eating. That's the worst. Like eating's the best. You should look forward to your eating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Last, do you have any other thoughts? Cause I felt like you're going to jump in there.
No, I like that.
Do you feel like most people do have like the blackheads or like the kind of the pores on their, like that you can see slightly on their face?
Yeah. So most people have visible pores. That's a thing. Now it's very genetic the way that your body handles them. Some people will get clogged pores that are closed, and that's what these comedones are. A blackhead, however, is when they're like open and they oxidize.
Right.
And then the stuff that's clogged turns black, because that's what oxygen does to organic matter. So it really just depends on like how tight your pores are and the way you're like genetically your skin like clumps together or not. Most people have to deal with one or the other. Not everybody. I deal with the closed ones. Sounds like Noelle is opposite C's.
Opposite C's. That's a new one.
Yeah.
If you're looking for the simple and easy solution for meal planning, PrepDish is everything you need and more. PrepDish is a subscription-based meal planning service with both paleo and gluten-free options. When you sign up for PrepDish, you'll receive an email every week with a grocery store list and instructions for prepping your meals ahead of time. After only 1 to 3 hours of prepping on the weekend, you'll have all your meals ready for the entire week. This will save you time, which there seems to never be enough of, and you'll have delicious meals to make like Asian turkey lettuce wraps or cherry pecan baked pears. As a special offer for our community, Allison is offering a free 2-week trial to PrepDish meal planning. Take advantage of this deal by heading over to PrepDish.com/paleowomen or check the show notes for more information. All right, last question. Question number 3 is from Candace. Hi, ladies. I'd love to get your take on which birth control method is best and what do you guys use? I've been on the pill since I was 17 and I'm now 24. I've also suffered with hypothalamic amenorrhea. I did not realize that this was the hypothalamic amenorrhea podcast. Sorry. Wow. Okay. For the past 2 years, but I just got my period back, 2 months of spotting, and then the last month, the real deal. I attribute this to gaining some weight and adding in collagen peptides.
Testament.
She said, you can leave this out because I know it sounds too much like a pitch, but it's truly what I think did it. I have malabsorption and visibly do not digest anything I eat. Since adding collagen peptides at least once a day in March, I've gained weight and muscle. My hair is growing like crazy for the first time in years, and I got my period back. That is a plug for Vital Proteins. And she's more referring to the fact that I think collagen peptides really has a great effect also on the gut. So yep. Awesome. Love hearing that. Okay, anyways, at one point, I went off birth control for 1 month about a year ago. In that month, my moods were crazy. I gained significant fat, not muscle, felt terrible, almost terrified I'd get pregnant. I know it can take months for you to get back to normal after being on the pill, but I was pretty miserable. I want to be off the pill, but I went back on and felt better. I'd like to know, is the hormonal birth control pill that bad? Am I messing myself up by taking it? I should also add that I have a strong family history of ovarian, cervical, and breast cancer. My mom doesn't have the BRCA mutation, but I haven't been tested. When I started the pill, my doctor told me it would reduce my risk of cancer. How would you rank birth control methods in order from best to worst? I've considered the IUD, another pill, the copper IUD, and tracking my fertility, but that scares me. Sometimes I get really anxious about using artificial hormones daily, but I also feel like there isn't a good alternative. I really value your insight. Thanks.
The best alternative, in my opinion, is forthcoming. It's supposed to hit the market next year, and that's for guys. to get their sperm blocked with a gel. And then when they're done, they can just take it out and everything's fine. And nobody suffers any side effects and everybody's fine. And of course, it took us 40 years of working in birth control to come up with this because sexism. Refer to podcast episode 79, please. So anyway, that could be great. If you have a long-term partner, that's a really great option, but that's not on the market yet. So we have to deal now. As for what you're doing, I'm a little bit confused because you said you have hypothalamic amenorrhea, but you're on the pill. The pill is supposed to make you have periods. And I'm assuming that that's what your doctor was trying to do, right? So doctors get very, up in arms, very touchy about women who don't menstruate regularly because they're like, oh no, you're building up uterine lining and you're going to get cancer. And there is like a small increase in risk of getting cancer if you're building up uterine lining and not shedding it. But it's very, you don't know if you're building up uterine lining and how often do you have to do it. You know, some doctors try to make you shed every 3 months. Some say once a year is fine. Most people I know who suffer from hypothalamic amenorrhea have it for years and years and don't contract cancer. So breathe a little bit more easily there. You know, if you are concerned and you still don't menstruate, you can take a progesterone pill or shot, you know, once every 6 to 12 months to sort of clear everything out if you want to. That is definitely an option. So far as birth control goes, I mean, there are some birth control options that are problematic. Some contain drospirenone, which is, it saves potassium in your kidneys, and this can be a problem. This was a problem for me. And any varieties like that, I would consider questioning or stepping back from. Yasmin, anything that is billed as like anti-androgenic is one of those. That's a concern. Ones that are really high in estrogen were also a concern because they put you at risk for like stroke and blood clotting problems. But those have by and large been flagged or changed, and you can tell your doctor you want to be in a low dose and then that won't be an issue for you. If you want to have the most natural birth control method possible, your options are fertility awareness, right? Which is just tracking your periods. And that's real. You know, if you are careful about your measurements and you have a regular cycle and you know for sure when you're ovulating and not, like, you're good. You're pretty good to go. And you can also pull out in times in which you're not quite sure if you're good to go, because that actually appears to be a reasonably good birth control method, so long as you do it right. So those are some options, and prophylactics are your options. Now, obviously, I don't take hormonal birth control because what would that do to me? So yeah, I use condoms and that's it. And like, too bad. You know? Too bad. Like, and that's just something that has to be the case for me. There's no way around it. I cannot be on hormonal birth control. If hormones really mess you up, a copper IUD is okay. I know a lot of women who very much hate the copper IUD because the copper IUD can cause copper toxicity. Now, you may be able to prevent this if you take zinc and magnesium at the same time, maybe some chromium. especially zinc. If you take zinc at the same time as you're on the copper IUD, you should be able to prevent copper toxicity, right? It's because that is essentially an imbalance between copper and zinc in your body. So that's an option. Then I would maybe move to the progesterone IUD if we're talking in terms of lightness, and the NuvaRing, perhaps. These things are like reasonably local, reasonably low dose. And then I would move into low dose pills. Things like the shot and the patch are really high in hormones. So I would steer clear of those. So pills probably fall somewhere in the middle. IUDs are a little bit easier for people to handle. There's no estrogen in the progesterone IUD, so there's no risk of blood clots or anything like that. There's only symptom management if that's a problem for you. I think that's kind of it. That's kind of where I stand. What do you think, babe?
So I'm going to just speak about my experience with the birth control. So here's the rundown. I was using the copper IUD, got that put in, inserted. It wasn't the best experience, like you said, and I know a lot of people who have not had good experiences as well. This is not to deter you from trying this, because this is a great option for some people. However, wasn't the best for me. Multiple different issues, to include really heavy periods. Also, it was inserted incorrectly and was like the one of the arms from it was like going into my uterine lining, which was very not comfortable, and my uterus would actually cramp. And then it got lost and it disappeared. Very traumatic, but however, they found it and I didn't have to get surgery to get it out, which was wonderful. Huge blessing there. So, got that removed, decided to not do that again, and I am just going to do a big plug for FAM. I'm going to say FAM is like the number one best way. I really don't want you to be scared or nervous of it. I think that if you read the book, Taking Charge of Your Fertility, you'll feel so much more empowered and you'll understand your body so much more. I think it should be required reading for all females because it's just so fascinating. And I wish that it was talked about so much more. After reading it also, you'll be like, how do people get pregnant? Cause it's like really, you really only have a pretty small window. And once you know what that window is and you learn your body more and you get to learn your body even more, it's you just wear condoms during that time. That's what we do. It's not a big deal. It's not I literally can be like, yeah, no, today's not the day. There's maybe like 2 or 3 days. And I mean, it's worked for me. So there's literally been like maybe I guess like 2 or 3 days where I feel like, OK, this is I'm probably fertile here, or I know I'm definitely fertile here. If you are tracking your temperature as well, so you just take your temperature once a day, every day, same time, usually in the morning, you'll know when that shift occurs and you've already ovulated. So it's pretty clear. I mean, if you just follow, I would say it would be really cool for, if you're really uncomfortable with it, you can use condoms for like a couple of months while you're just getting used to it. But you'll know. I mean, you'll be like, okay, here's, you know, I'm about to ovulate in a day or two based on what I've done before, based on the tracking that I've done the last few months. And it's probably going to be tomorrow, the next day. You'll based on tracking your cervical fluid and your temperature, you'll be like, okay, I'm ovulating, definitely ovulating today or, you know, within the next 24 hours. And then when you see that temperature shift, you're done. So it's, you know, it's just so reliable and it's so helpful. And it's not like you have to use that as your only form of birth control. Like I said, if it helps you, you can wear condoms for the week, you know, maybe the 4 days before and the 4 days after you ovulate when you have sex in that window. So that to me just seems like such a more simple option when it comes to preventing and then, you know, wanting to get pregnant again or wanting to get pregnant. It's just so helpful. So we'll link to that book in the show notes. I think that taking synthetic hormones for a long period of time, it's not something that I recommend. I'm going to be honest. I don't go and say, you know, well, just get on hormonal birth control. That'll solve everything. And that's mostly because it is prescribed in a lot of cases to cover up symptoms of something going on that is not caused by the lack of birth control pills. Usually the root cause is something else. And so birth control pills are prescribed to put a Band-Aid on an issue that is much deeper and needs to be investigated further, but then also hopefully, you know, resolved in a different way. So that's kind of, you know, my thing with hormonal birth control. And I'm thinking that because you get off of the birth control and you do have issues, there might be something else going on that's causing all of that. It's totally up to you if you want to get off hormonal birth control long term and switch to using something else. It does take a few months to reset and get ready. But I hear you. I don't want you to feel miserable. Nobody likes to be miserable. I felt that way when I was on hormonal birth control for the 2 months that I tried it. I was just absolutely miserable. So it's not for me. And I think, you know, it might be worth working with a couple different people, again, getting a second opinion and stuff like that when it comes to what you should use and what is the cause of some of those symptoms that you are having. So any other thoughts, Steffi?
No, that was great. Thank you.
Yay. So that's it. So I don't have anything else to say. I'm really excited about our podcast next week. We're bringing on another guest. So look out for that. That's going to be fun. If you want more from Steffi, go to paleoforwomen.com. For more from me, you can go to coconutsandkettlebells.com. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Paleo Women Podcast for really cool things, updates from us, and what's coming up on the show. We'll talk to you next week.